persists in repeating commands and seems to imagine that he is drilling men. Personally, I have hopes he will be all right now. Everything here is always the same. The same khaki-clad civilians do the same uninspiring things as complacently as ever. They are still surprised that anyone should be mad enough to want to go from this comfort to a place where men are and do not merely play at being soldiers. I am writing this in front of an open casement window overlooking the sea. The sky is cloudless. The russet sails of the fishing smacks flame in the sun, but it is not war. But I dare not look at it. It only makes me angry. Angry with myself for being here, and with the others for being content to be here. When men, whom I have once despised as effeminate, are sent back wounded from the front, when nearly everyone I know is either going or has gone, can I think of this with anything but rage and shame?
Oxford, 28th of February, 1915. I think it is harder now the spring days are beginning to keep the thought of war before one's mind, especially here, where there is always a kind of dreamy spell which makes one feel that nothing poignant and terrible can ever come near. In the churches at Oxford, where so many of the congregation are soldiers, we are always having it impressed upon us that the call of our country is the call of God. Is it? I wish I could feel sure that it was.
Liverpool Street Hotel, London, 12th of March, 1915. I think I have succeeded at last. If all goes well, I stand a good chance of getting out to the front, either straight to Belgium or else to the Dardanelles in about 10 days' time. At worst, I ought to be out there in a month with the second draft. You come down on Monday, Nespa. Couldn't you arrange for me to meet you somewhere, either on your arrival or any time that is convenient? I couldn't go off to the front without seeing you.
Buxton, 15th of March, 1915. You will have received my first letter by now, telling you that I went down 10 days earlier because I was ill, so I did not get yours till today. I can hardly believe it is true. I was expecting something like it, of course, but it is none the less of a shock for all that. It is difficult to realize that the moment has actually come at last when I shall have no peace of mind any more until the war is over.
Where can I meet you? I shall be quite on my own and at liberty to come up to Manchester if necessary. Malden, 19th of March, 1915. And so it is over now, the parting. Only a turn of head, and all that is left is to wait and work and hope. But I am coming back, dear. Let it always be when and not if. As yet, everything is incomplete. But last night, unreal as it seems to be, must have some consummation. That will come when we shall live our roseate poem through as we have dreamt it. If you want to give me a little present to take away, I have thought of something. A fountain pen, self-filling and with a more or less broad nib to suit my writing. But let it be quite a plain, inexpensive one.
Buxton, 21st of March, 1915. Since you went, I have thought many times how selfish and how wrong I was to appear to doubt your mind's decision, which saw so clearly what it could not express in words. First, because my own apprehension was temporarily clouded by personal distress. You will forgive me, won't you? For I do understand really what is driving you forward. I do know that the highest kind of courage is that which is ready not to sacrifice itself on behalf of some obvious cause, which all men can see to be right, but if necessary, to die for the sake of an ideal. I do recognize that your heroism in the abstract is that ideal, and therefore I would not attempt any more to interfere with your resolution, even if I could. You will tell me when you actually leave England, won't you? Perhaps it will be hardest then, but I would rather know. Goodbye, my dear, and as much love as you wish. B. 22nd of March, 1915. I do not know how to thank you, but perhaps you can imagine a little how I felt when I opened your letter this morning. How did you know I liked amethysts best? They are so full of light and depth that I feel as if I was looking into someone's soul.
We go by special trains to Southampton. where we are kept more or less in hiding until the evening. We then cross over in small steamers, about 200 men in each, under cover of darkness. Havre is where we are to be landed, though I am not allowed to tell you this, and from there, presumably, we are sent up into the fighting line. I will try to send you a telegram when we get to Havre, if censors allow such things. I have not forgotten our arrangement about putting small dots in pencil under certain letters that you may know where I am. Your letters to me, of course, will not be tampered with at all. Have you written to Mother yet? I told her I'd been to Buxton to say goodbye, and have just had a long letter from her, largely about you. You can be as frank as you like. She will understand. It is nearly 2 o'clock, and I have to get up early. I have just been wondering what it will feel like to be 20 tomorrow. Shall I feel so very old? And yet we are both only children still. Children who have dreamt each the dreams of a child, and meeting at the gateway of a fairer garden, tremble lest, after all, their dreams come true. Good night, dear. Love and hope, R.
I have just been for a long walk with Edward. You are wrong in thinking he disapproved of what has arisen between us. He is glad that I may be the means of establishing your connection with him, and saving from loss what was wrought out between you in Uppingham days.
I am terribly busy at present, paying billets, issuing emergency rations, and have to attend an officers' meeting in a few minutes. This is just a hurried note to catch the post. Think of me tomorrow night and after. I can hardly realize that in a very few hours I may be in a trench. Folkestone, 1st of April 1915. Just on point of crossing, Roland. Back up, get up, the girl.